Peace, love, blessings, and honor. Thank you for joining us. I'm your co-host, Eyes Red.
And I'm your co-host, Reality Soldier.
And we are Garvey's Ghost in the Spectrum of Roots.
You know, we're like February with a cartoon, you know what I mean? You're coming like with a TV.
Theme trailer. Yes. So, yes, today we have this evening, we have a very special guest with us today. And we're going to broach some different subjects.
Where are we again?
We're in County Mayo.
County Mayo, in the wild west of Ireland.
That's the one, man, where my mother come from, you know what I mean? I can't stop saying I finally reached, you know what I mean, for real. But yes, this evening's guest is the one and only, the wonderful Rastini. Greetings, Rastini.
Yes, how are you doing, King? Greetings and love. Thank you so much for having us and coming all the way to Ballycastle.
Yes.
Thanks.
No, it's a good time to meet you. My first time of meeting you, so that's an honour for me.
Total honour.
And we're going to have a very fascinating conversation. I'm intrigued. I really am, honestly.
So without further ado, let's take it from the beginning. Like, you know, where you was born, where you grow, your family situation, mother, father, siblings.
Tell us
how it got.
Yeah, so I was born in a country called Suriname.
Okay.
Suriname is on the north coast of South America.
Oh, right,
And it is part of the Caribbean, but it's part of the Caribbean that is on the continent.
Right.
So so geographically, we're not in the Caribbean, although we're also close to the Caribbean Sea.
Right.
But culturally, we are classed as Caribbean, Caribbean people, because we have the same history and the same culture.
Right.
Yeah, as other Caribbean countries. So that's where I was born.
And colonially, that's the Netherlands, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Ruud Gullit.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ruud Gullit, Eric Arten. It was a colony of Holland.
Right.
Sugar plantation, big sugar plantations, and coffee, and after slavery, they brought people from India, from Indonesia, from what is now Pakistan,
right,
and what is now India, and they brought them there as indentured laborers to come and work there. So it's kind of very similar to Jamaica, I think, you know.
Okay,
but because we are a Dutch colony, we had also indentured laborers from China and from Indonesia.
Okay.
Yeah. So those are also cultural groups in Suriname. So in Suriname, it's pretty mixed, you know. People are very much mixed, very much integrated.
Okay. So you're exposed to lots of different subcultures.
Yes, absolutely. So
food and stuff
Yes.
Right.
So the first people there were the Amazonian Indians.
Okay.
Yeah, and then so there were different tribes of Amazonian Indians, and after them, the Europeans came. So you have Europeans there, and then the Europeans brought the African slaves first, and then they brought Indians, Chinese. But then in the meanwhile, there's a lot of other people that came, a lot of people, Lebanese Jews, came there. Also, Jews that fled from Europe. So the Jews, they started in Portugal, and they were chased there by the Catholics.
Right.
And then they went to Brazil.
Yes.
And then they were chased there by the Portuguese again. And then they went to French Guiana. And then the French came to French Guiana, and they chased them away. So the only place they could go is Suriname. So in Suriname were the Dutch Protestants.
Right.
So they just took their money, shoved them up the river.
So let's hear a little bit about your family and, you know, the dynamics of that and how.
So I come from a family of five. So my dad and my mom, and I have two other brothers, so three sons.
Right.
And
you're the eldest, youngest?
I'm the oldest, And so my mom is still alive. My father is late, but my mom is still alive, and my three brothers are still alive.
Okay.
Yeah.
Living back home.
Yeah, living back home. It's funny because all the three of us, we got into growing stuff, you know. So we all kind of, like, I'm growing in Europe and they're growing in Suriname.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so they have really lovely gardens as well, right, within Suriname, okay. Although in Suriname, yeah.
So you're like a family of farmers, so to speak.
Yes, yeah. Although we're not coming from farming background, but right. We just always...
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
We love the plants.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
So how was school and growing up in school and everything for you?
Yeah, school is, in Suriname, it's kind of similar as in Holland and in Europe.
Okay.
So you go to your primary school, then secondary school, and then university. So I went all the way to secondary school, and I didn't go to university.
Right.
So, which would be... Yeah, I probably would have, you know, like if I was in another family, I probably would have gone to university, you know,
okay.
because it was pretty accessible to people at that time. So,
wow.
I went through my school years there. It was pretty normal, you know, I was not extra good or extra bad. I was just normal student.
Did you enjoy it? Or was it fun? Or
I hated it.
Okay.
I absolutely
hated it. I've been waiting so long to hear somebody.
Somebody say that, innit? For real. Said,
oh, yeah, I really liked school. No, I don't want to hear that.
No. I didn't like it at all.
Okay.
I remember sometimes in the break, I'll be waiting till everybody goes in and I'll just be the last person and I'll be just watching them all go in like sheep, you know. And I was like, we're just like a herd of cows, like, you know.
Right.
And everybody filed in and I'd go and, yeah, I hated it. I didn't like it. But I just did what I needed to do. And,
right.
Yeah.
And got through with it.
Yeah.
Did you have any influential teachers or anything that kind of...
Yes, yes, yeah? I did. I did have a really amazing maths teacher.
Okay.
Because I was terrible at maths for years. And because in Suriname we had a revolution, so a lot of the Dutch teachers, they went back to Holland.
Right.
So we had a lot of... We didn't have a lot of teachers.
Okay.
So sometimes whole years we'd have no maths teacher or no science teacher.
Right.
So a physics teacher. So... So we missed a lot, and then because we missed a lot, and if you had a good teacher, you know, you'd catch up a little bit, you know. So,
right. So
I had really one, and I always remember that because it really inspired me later in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Because he used to, if you talk about a bank, you know, he'll just draw a little puppet with a big top hat on it.
Yeah.
And that would be the bank. And he'll make a drawing of all the different things. So it didn't make it wasn't so abstract for us.
Right.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So that worked really good for me, you know. So sometimes it's just the way people teach as well, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So then he made it more understandable for you.
For me, yeah. For me it was like brilliant, you know, yeah.
Okay. And did you sit exams and them kind of things? Was you...
Yes, yes. Yeah. So you do your like you have your leaving cert exam here.
Okay.
You do one there as well.
Right.
So I did that exam and I passed. Was no problem. And then I did my my leaving cert exam. Mm. So yeah, you have inter cert here, isn't it? The one that you do in 4 years, 4 or 5.
I'm not even sure how it goes now because they changed the system. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but so the. Anyway, it's kind of this, in total, it's in the same amount of years, but
yes,
it's just broken up a little bit different.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I passed those exams and then I didn't go to university. I started working straight away.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So first I started working for my dad.
What did dad do?
My dad, he did a few things, but one of the things, he had a shop, a natural health store.
Uh-huh.
And he had been, since I was really young, he had been studying phytotherapy. So that's healing with herbs and, you know, so he kind of got really good at it and he could heal a lot of people.
Okay.
So over his life, he's healed loads of people and he never charged for it or anything.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
But he did have a shop selling all the stuff. So he did... You know, like the clients would come and buy some of his products, you know, and so he had a little shop selling homeopathy and
it
was almost like a natural health store.
Yeah.
We used to sell brown bread and all that kind of thing. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what was your kind of ambitions when you was at school? What did you like kind of see yourself getting into?
What I really wanted to do, what I really, really wanted to do is I wanted to teach.
Oh, okay.
I wanted to become a teacher. Right. That's what I wanted to do, but I never got the opportunity.
So how come you didn't get the opportunity to fulfill your ambition at school and in teaching? Was it just because you didn't go to university or?
Yes, okay. Yes. That's why. So it has always been hanging in my mind, you know. Mm. Until I came to Europe. And then when I came to Ireland, I found myself homeless one day.
When did you come to Ireland?
I came to Ireland around 2001. Yeah, 2001 I came to Ireland. So when I came, I met a girl.
And what made you come to Ireland? Suriname to Ireland.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yeah, good question.
I told you, I'm curious. How is this?
Yeah, so I was living in Holland at the time.
Okay.
Right.
And my brother came to visit me. So he came to visit me for a while. So I said, we have to do something nice, you know, let's go for a road trip somewhere. And I had a friend that lived in Holland and came to Ireland, and he was looking for asylum, basically.
Okay.
So he was in an asylum center, but they were going to have a party. And they said, oh, you come and play some tunes, like, you know. So me and my brother said, yeah, great idea, let's go to the party.
Okay.
So we drove from Holland to Ireland.
Wow.
Yeah.
Long drive.
Now I've been to some raves and I've had to travel, but that's a hell of a road. That's
yeah,
a road trip.
Yeah. Well, we were just going for the trip, really. Right, like, right. You know, yeah.
So when did you actually take up music and the interest of music? When did that develop?
Yeah, so I always listen to music, but I come from the Caribbean side, you know, so right. I used to always listen to dancehall.
Okay.
So I started listening to, you know, Buchu Bantan. I think around Buchu Bantan I started, it was really the first that I really, Shabarangs, Buchu Bantan. Mm. That's kind of what I started listening to. And then Sisla and so on, you know. Yeah. So that's where I really got interested into reggae music and dancehall music, right. Particularly, you know. But I, since then, I used to like listening to Burning Spear, and I used to like Bob Marley as well. And with Burning Spear is what I really always liked. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
were listening to these artists when you were still back in Suriname.
Yes, yes.
So the whole was part of the musical currency then.
Yes,
reggae music.
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, Burning Spear, Gregory Isaacs. Mm. I really loved Gregory Isaacs. Right. As well. Yeah,
cool,
yeah.
Luna.
He's probably, you know, definitely my favorite.
Mm.
Yeah, and so then I kind of started listening a lot to that. The music was, I listened to it all the time, like 24/7 was in my ears.
Okay.
So, and then, so I didn't know too much about dub. I didn't know anything. I didn't even know it existed.
Okay.
No. But one day I was in Cork, I was living in Cork at that stage, and my friend Kian Finn, I don't know if you remember Kian Finn.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so my friend Kian Finn, he had just started a band with some other guys, reggae band. And they were going to have one of their first gigs. So he was outside flyering. So I'm walking past him, going home from school. And he says to me, oh, brother, would you come to my gig? I have a reggae gig here tonight. And I said, yeah. Why not, you know? So yeah. I took the flyer, went to the gig, and it was an amazing gig. It was like really small, you know, like maybe 50 people in a little bar, and and he's an amazing singer, you know. So yeah. So after the gig, we started talking, you know, and he came to my place, so we spent the whole night talking about reggae music and exchanging music. And at some stage in the night, he says to me, he lets me listen to this music, you know, this music, dub music that he had. And He played some Alpha and Omega, some Irration Steppers, all that. And played the music, and I was like, wow, this is amazing.
Okay.
I've never heard this music before, you know.
Right.
So we're listening to Alpha and Omega, and he says to me, let's see what they look like, you know. So we went to the computer, and we looked for an image of Alpha and Omega. What do they look like? We saw like a picture of Christine with her hand in the air, bass, guitar. And we're like, oh, we thought they were black people that were making this music. So we thought, wow, really nice music. So I started listening to that. He gave me some of his music. And that's how I got introduced to dub. The whole, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And from then I just listened to dub.
Okay. Yeah. And you play instruments?
No. No. Okay. No, I don't.
You're just performing artist.
Just
and songwriting.
Yeah, okay. And songwriting. Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, that's it.
So what about what was it about reggae music that kind of attracted you? Was it the vibe in the dance, or was it the lyrical content, the culture? Did you relate to it because you were Caribbean? What was it? What was special about that?
It was the lyrical content.
Okay.
Especially the lyrical content, because, you know, that was the time, you know, that people started, you know, talking about Rastafari in dancehall music.
Okay.
So I got interested in, you know, that message, and so that's how I got, you know, listened a lot to Capleton, listened a lot to Sisla.
Right.
And those, the lyrical, it wasn't the dance, you know, because we wouldn't be going to dances in Suriname like they would be in, like dances in Suriname would be Surinamese music, you know, right. The traditional.
Okay.
What do they call that music in Suriname?
So there's Kaseko, there's Kawina. Kawina is like more.
Kawina.
Yeah. Yeah, so those are more maroon.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
Kaseko is more from the more Afro-Caribbean people in the cities.
Mm. Yes.
But then the Kawina would be more from the you know, people that live, the maroons that live in the jungle. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So most young people in my time, you know, if they go to a dance, that's the music they'll be listening to. You know.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So did you, on your musical journey so far, did you find that any obstacles, any challenges?
No, I wasn't really performing, so it was just a question of, you know, finding the music, you know, like,
right.
Because I'm living here in Ireland, so you'd be looking and on the internet and you'd be trying to, and...
So accessibility would have been one of the challenges
then? It would have been at that time.
Okay.
Yeah, but because you'd have some very good reggae shops in Ireland, in town. But there wouldn't be a big dub
scene.
No, you know, so, right. And there wouldn't be a lot of that type of music around, you know, so.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was probably the biggest challenge, you know, to find the music. But, you know, the internet was starting to come in and, you know, so you could search for things. And
When did you really, like, get the launch kind of thing?
For making music?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was in college. And I started writing music.
What were you doing?
I was studying at that time. I was studying sociology and computer science.
Okay.
So I studied that in Cork. So that is the time that I met Kian, and that is the time that I really started writing music and making music. Yeah. Okay. At that time, it was really interesting because Radical Guru was living in Cork.
Okay.
I was living in Cork. Kian was living in Cork. We have a few other brethren in Ireland that are making music and that are, you know, there was Revelation Sound in Cork. Mm-hmm. There was, you know, the boys from World Based Culture, Manji and all that. They are more into jungle and that kind of music, but they're also into dub. So it was a whole heap of people that were,
cool.
Just at one time, you know, all there.
Wicked. Go on. So the sound system culture here, how is that for you?
That's how I got introduced to it, you know, living in Cork. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
My first sound system dance, Revelation Sound.
Right, Benji.
Yeah. Benji, yeah, Benji right, Revelation, right. Yeah, and Maya. So that would be one of my first sound system dancers that I've been, yeah.
Nice.
So you're starting to immerse yourself in the music roots, music culture as it was here.
Yes.
And starting to move with certain and certain men. But you were at college and you were saying you're doing sociology and what?
Computer science.
Okay, so what was the end goal for you at that time?
Yes, so so as I told you before, I got into college in a really funny way because
I'll say it was a girl.
Because we didn't even finish that story either. You know,
we're coming back to that one.
Yeah. At some point, my relationship with the girl broke down.
Okay.
And
I knew a girl was involved in this.
Yeah. And I left the house.
Wow.
So I was homeless. I didn't have any place at all. Yeah. So I had thought, okay, I'll go back to England. You know, I'll go to England and... So I went to the bus station and I was going to catch the bus to the ferry and it was going to bring me to England and I was going to try to find my way in England.
Okay.
So
Were you heading to? London?
London. I would have gone to London, right. Yeah. So, yeah, I went to the bus station and as I arrived, I noticed the bus has left.
Mm.
And the next bus is next morning, 8 o'clock. So I said, okay, I'll stay in the station. So I stayed at the station. And at about 8 o'clock, I saw this light going like, Cork, Cork, Cork.
Okay.
And I said to myself, you know, why am I going to do in England? I have nowhere to go or anywhere, So why don't I just go to Cork, you know? So I just took a bus to Cork. I had only a bag of clothes behind me. That's all I had.
Okay.
So I took the bus to Cork. And I arrived in Cork in the night, and I said, I'll go and try to find, a homeless shelter or something.
Okay.
So I'll go to the police, and I asked about the homeless shelter. So the police was really nice. He said, I'll bring you over, and he brought me over. Around the corner was a homeless shelter. And they said, it's past 10, you can't come in anymore, but come tomorrow, right?
Okay.
So the police says to me, like, look, I can't bring you inside, but there's a bench here, and you can sleep on the bench.
Wow.
Yeah. So I said, yeah.
That's not the kind of experience we're accustomed to.
No,
with our relationship with the police.
No.
You must be exuding a special kind of spirit for them to reciprocate that vibe to
but
you, brother.
Generally, police here they have a different type of policy.
All right.
A different way of policing in Ireland,
Okay,
so, it's kind of, police here don't carry weapons.
Right.
So they have to be really talented to talk people down and they have to be really skilled.
And this is the guard, isn't it?
That's the guard, that's here. So they're very, very skilled people,
Right.
So anyway, so yeah, he says you can stay there. And the next morning he brings me there and I get a place into the homeless shelter, So I'm happy. And they said, the next morning they said, you have to go and meet the social worker downstairs. So I go to meet the social worker, and as I come in and I sit there, and he says, tell me, why are you homeless? So I said, just my relationship broke down and I left the house, so I just don't have any other place to go.
Mm.
And he looks at me and he says, what do you want to do with your life? No, he said, first he asked me, are you using drugs? Are you drinking?
Right.
I said, no, I don't. And he says, what do you want to do with your life, What do you want to be? I says, I want to be a teacher, That's what I wanted to be. So he says, you know what it takes to be a teacher? I said, yeah, I have to go to university. He says, all right. He takes the phone. He calls the local college in Cork. And he speaks to two ladies there, Anne O'Malley and Pauline Matthews. I never forget the names.
You see, you won't forget those names.
No. And he calls and he says, we have this student there and he wants to be a teacher. So he has to go to college. So, do with him what you have to do, basically.
Wow.
And he says, you go now and you go and meet Pauline Matthews and Anne O'Malley and they'll put you in a course.
Nice.
So I go there and so I got into an access college, not university yet, but an access college.
Yes.
University. Yeah. And so I did that. I did social studies, social and health studies I did. And then I went to... to university. Okay. And the aim was to, you know, to become a teacher, like after all these years. At that time, I was like, I don't know how old, 2008. You know, I was like in the 30s, we are close to 30s already.
Did you reach the goal then and start teaching?
So, yeah, eventually, you know, I got my degree there. Nice. And then I went to teaching college in Galway. Mm. And I did 2 years there. And then I thought I'd be a teacher, you know, because I graduated, I registered myself, teacher. So and then I started applying for jobs as a teacher.
Right.
Until the day of today, I've never got one.
Okay.
Really?
No.
Wow.
No. I never even got an interview.
Wow.
No. But I still went to teach because I wanted to teach. So I went to teach, first I went to teach development education. And I taught development education about a year. And then I went into sexual health education.
Okay.
I did that for a few years. And I taught all the schools in Ireland and even the universities. And,
okay.
Wow. Yeah. So that was really nice. I did the sexual health education. And then at that stage, me and Eva, we bought the garden here down the road. Mm-hmm. So I was living in Limerick then, and then I moved to here.
Okay.
And the aim was to kind of see if we would be able to grow food. Mm. So, you know, enough to at least take care of ourselves and maybe sell some. That was our idea.
Right. Okay.
So
you've skipped a little bit now because you were made homeless because of a breakdown of a relationship. You went on this journey of fulfillment, that you had that sliding doors moment where you could have gotten a bus, you missed the bus, you went to Cork because you saw that vision, ended up going to university, ended up getting your ability to teach.
To teach,
didn't quite happen.
Yeah.
And then you just slid in your significant others in there somehow. Did you? Is that what just happened? Did you mention you said you and somebody bought
me and Eva.
Yeah. And Eva is?
Yes. And Eva is my fiancée.
Oh, hey. You see, that's what I'm saying. Bruv, don't bypass. I want to know the story. I'm a Mills and Boon kind of guy. I'm a romantic at heart. So where did you meet Eva? Was it Eva?
Oh, yeah.
Was
that's also that's also a funny story. So I was working in Dublin at the time, and
teaching.
Teaching. Right. Yeah, but when I was living in Cork, but I was just going up and down, and at that time, I stayed in a hostel, and every time I went into the hostel, I heard this really nice reggae music. You know, it was not just Bob Marley or you know, it was like Dennis Brown or Barris Hammond.
See, all right.
Every time I went into it, I said, this is the hostel where I should be staying. So, so every time I was in Dublin, I was staying in the same hostel.
Right.
And one day I was in the hostel and somebody had stolen my computer charger. So I went downstairs and I said, I don't know if somebody found the computer charger because I lost my computer charger. Mm. And the person I was speaking to was Eva.
Okay.
So Eva was playing the reggae music in the place.
Okay.
And then we started talking about reggae music and exchanging reggae music. So we became really good friends around reggae music. Yeah. And we started going to gigs and things. And then one thing led to another. So that,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. How long have you guys been together now, roughly?
About 10 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Damn, fiancé? What y'all waiting for?
When's the bell's going to ring?
No, I want an invite.
No, but you know what the thing is, like, so in this tradition, you have to build your house first before you bring her in married. Right? So I said, I'll get the house built first, but it's been taking, like, we've been now at it like for 7 years.
All right.
Right? But yeah, hopefully this year we make some more moves and nice. Everything in its own time, really.
Of course.
Nothing before the time.
Beautiful story.
Okay. Let's hear about you as established artist now and when your career really kind of picked up. And because, you know, everyone knows Ras Tin in the dub scene and your musical works, you know what I mean? Let's hear a little bit more about that, please.
Okay. So I started recording vocals. I started writing. And then I used to ask Kian, because Kian is a brilliant singer, you know. So I used to ask Kian, look what I wrote, would you sing that, you know? And Kian used to tell me always, why don't you sing it yourself? I used to say, oh man, I can't sing, you know. And then he would be performing, and then most of the gigs, at some stage of the gig, he'll say, introducing Ras Tin or something like that. And then he'd call you up to come to the stage to sing a song with him, you know, so.
Put it on
mic.
You.
Yeah. So he just hands you the mic. And then, so that's how I started, really.
Okay.
All right.
And then I didn't have any recording gear, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then one day Ava came to me and she bought me this, sound card and a mic to start recording myself.
Wow.
It was just a present, like, you know.
Okay.
Beautiful.
So then another time she came to me and she says, you have two choices, like you can go and learn how to play the piano or you can go and get vocal lessons. So I said, oh, I don't know what I want. I don't know what I want. So she says, like, you can go and do like two lessons of piano, two lessons of vocal, and then you can choose which one you do. I said, cool. So I went for the piano, really liked it. And then I went to the vocal and I said, I'll do the vocal.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So I chose to do the vocal lessons. So I got a bit of vocal lessons at that stage. And then I recorded a few tunes.
What was the first label you released on?
Steppers.
Okay.
Yeah, Steppers. So,
right.
So, yeah, so at that time, that was around, let's say, 2012.
Okay.
2012, I remember, so my friend Radical Guru and Kian and Ben decided to release a single.
Okay.
So they were promoting the single, and if the two of them were in Dublin, they'd always come to my house and we'd be cooking and, you know, we'd make food and we'd have a smoke and we'd be just having a good time. So they used to always come to my house at that time already. So they came to Dublin to do the gig, basically, and with Ben. So Ben was the producer on Ben and Radical Guru produced the
single. What was your first tune called?
The first tune was Monsoon.
Okay, yes.
So they came and they did the show, and then after the show, the next day they came to my house with Ben, and I was just playing some music, and that tune came on, and then Ben says, oh, I really like this tune, you know, would you like to, you know, get it, let me release it, or...
Yeah.
So I said, yeah, no problem. So I sent them the vocals and everything. And that was the first Dub Dynasty album.
Okay. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So I think the rest of the album was already gone off to the master. So right. So Monsoon didn't make it on the album.
Okay.
But it was released as a 10-inch with the album.
All right.
Yeah. So right after the album, right.
And it's the same album with Black Rose and...
No. That was the first Dub Dynasty album.
Right.
So the second one was the one with Black Rose. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'd have to look into the first one. I can't really...
Unrelenting Force.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was the first. And that one was a few tunes with Dub Judah. There was one with Key and Finn as well, 9 years of war.
Okay.
There were some nice tunes on that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when you started working with Ben, is this when you started to get booked more as an artist and start to travel and
kind
of vibes?
Yeah, so at that stage I hadn't been really performing that much, you know. Like I was split. I was sometimes performing with a local a producer in Dublin, a really good producer, Dan Taliras, from Echo Bus Records, and he had a band, and I was kind of touring, you know, going around with them. And so that's how I kind of learned a lot about recording and, you know, vocalizing. So that's how I kind of learned. And
So would you say it was when you was working with Ben that your career as an artist really kind of took off then?
Yes, yes, definitely. So since I released Monsoon, then... just started to get more and more work.
Okay.
And then I released also an album with Alpha and Omega.
Okay.
So that's kind of where I started getting more and more work.
Because when I first heard you, I thought this guy's got a new, unique voice and style. You know what I mean? Like, you hear Ras Tinny, you know it's Ras Tinny. No one else don't really sound like that. Yes, you know what I mean? Yes. And the Monsoon, I was going to ask you, was that like, because to me that sounds like part of your history and your culture, like something you grew with, you know what I mean? It sounds like an experience you had while you wrote that kind of track.
That tune, most of my music is rooted in the environment in which I live, you know.
Okay.
Yeah. At that time, I was living in Dublin,
right?
And the Monsoon was just it was actually written about. I started reading something about a monsoon had destroyed this village or whatever, and people.
Okay.
And then I was reading about the monsoon, and then I found out that the monsoon happens almost everywhere, you know?
Yeah.
And I was thinking it was only a thing of India and, a lot of places that have the monsoon. So that's how I started thinking about that. And I was thinking like, and then I just wrote the tune, you know, the monsoon come, because it was like the monsoon come sounds a little bit like the monsoon come. I started playing with that a little bit. And that's how it works.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're traveling Europe and the career's taking off nicely. Yeah. How did you find all the traveling, the work in, you know, how did you find the whole scene in Europe?
Oh.
Because you started here in Ireland, really, with the dub, isn't it?
Yes.
So when you go to Europe,
yes.
It's like really big, isn't it?
It's unbelievable, you know. Yeah. It's like, it's when you first experience it, like, I think maybe that's where I saw you the first. Was it in, you know, there was this festival in Wales.
You Not.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
With Aimitri.
Yeah.
That's so that's where I first saw, like, all the big sound systems, like Irration Steppers.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was totally... totally blown away, like, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, it was like, you know, it was for me like unforgettable experience.
Right.
And so I tried to go to almost every one of them. I think I missed only one of them.
Right.
Yeah.
Just to go back a little bit, is there a sound system culture in your homeland?
No.
Okay.
Not that I know of, no.
Right,
no.
Okay.
Maybe now it will start, you know, but...
You know, you said it was like, they had the same vibes as the West Indies, so I thought maybe, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Not in that way, you know, more in the way of we have the same slavery, indentured labor history, you know, we have that kind of history.
Yeah.
The food that we eat is very similar, you know, like we eat salt fish as well, we eat rice and peas as well, you know, we have...
I just thought because the same thing, sound system was a big part of like Jamaican culture, and it was like our radio stations to hear what we needed to hear.
Yes.
Because, you know, mainstream don't play at them time.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I was just wondering, like, the same thing, if there was that kind of culture.
Yeah.
Back in...
But see, the thing is, like, in Jamaica, dancehall would have been what Kawina and Kaseko would have been in Suriname.
Right,
yeah, of course.
You know, it'd be basically the same thing. It'd be completely different. Like in Suriname, it sound different because it's African. It's more African, you know. So it sounds different, but it's the same vibe.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, it's the same vibe, you know.
So it does bring the community together and them kind of things.
It does, it does, yes.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about, I can't even say the word. It derives from the word tree,
arboretum.
Arboretum,
yes.
So definitely a very, very passionate about growing.
Yes.
How did that start over here? How did it materialize? What's the story?
Yes. So me and Ava bought about an acre of land around.
So she has that corner. Kind of interest in
yes.
In, okay.
And that was the idea, was to kind of grow, you know, be able to, you know, live out of the city, grow food, live.
So grow your live own the food. Life. Yeah.
Live the life. That was the idea, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but we had no money.
You just had the sweat of your brow and the land. Just know, like the biblical times.
We wanted the farm, but we didn't have farm money. Right. You know? So we said, you know what? We look for the cheapest land available in Ireland. Mm. And all we want is that it's close to the sea.
Okay.
Yeah. So we did a search on the cheapest land in Ireland, right? And then we found a piece of a field right around the corner here. If you just go a little bit up the road here.
Mm. I think we passed it earlier.
Yeah, if right in front of the Atlantic Ocean, right?
Okay.
It was basically a field for cattle.
Right.
So we saw it. We said, it is cheap. We'll get it. Like, you know, we'll try to get it. So, and we'll build our house or we'll build whatever, and we'll live there, right? So we said that. And we called the estate agent, right? And the estate agent said, but where do you live? And we were like, Dublin. And he was like, well, why do you want the field?
You know? Who are these crazy people?
All the way here on the west coast of Ireland, in front of the ocean. Like, so we were telling him, like, yeah, maybe build a house or something, you know. I thought, it'd be brilliant in front of the ocean. Like, he says, but you'd never get planning permission to build a house here. Like, you know, so he says, but come over. And there's a lot of things being sold around here. And that was the recession time, you know, when the global recession.
Right.
Yeah. So he says, come over. And everybody was selling their everything really cheap. Like, you know, so he says, there's plenty to buy here, but I wouldn't tell you to buy that, like, because you will never be able to build a house on it.
Right.
So we went over, we came all the way from Dublin, came here, and he said, come, let's go for a spin. So we brought us on a spin, we went, drove around, and then we passed the house there on our way back to the village.
Okay.
And as we passed the house, we saw for sale. So we went in, it's completely overgrown, completely. You couldn't even walk in anymore. It was all overgrown. But there was a house there, and we saw it, and we're like, oh, Jesus, that looks like nice, you know, with all the trees around it. And
you could visualize that.
Yeah, so I couldn't visualize anything because I didn't know what was in the back, but I knew I loved those trees around the house, you know, I like that vibe. So I says to Eva, let's find out how much it's, and it was only, I think it cost only 25,000. Wow. Yeah.
With the acre of land.
Yeah, with the acre of land. It was really cheap. So.
Euros,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow. So we said to Michael, who is the guy that is living here beside you now.
Okay,
that,
all right.
So he became our real best friend here, you know. So Michael says to us, look, I'm going to find out for you, like, you know, and I'll sort you out, I'll organize the wholesale, organize everything.
Wow.
So we bought the place. But the house is derelict. The house is nobody has been living there for the last 13 years.
Okay.
At that time, you know, now it's more than 20 years.
Yeah.
So people have been using it as a dump. They've been, you know, throwing all the rubbish there. So anyway, we bought it eventually and then started to kind of open it up and go inside and see what is left, like, you know. So the house was derelict, and then we started basically working on it.
Mm.
But we had an acre of land there, and we said, okay, well, so I went to go and study farming, organic farming.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
So I went to Scotland and I did a postgraduate diploma in organic farming. Did it. And half the diploma, I figured out myself, I'll never have enough land to be able to farm, you know. So, but we had bought it already, so we said, so what will we do with it, you know? So just different ways to skin a cat, you know, to make it work.
But the original idea was to be self-sustaining and grow your own food, right?
Yes. No, we still grow our own food as well, you know. Right. Like we still grow a good bit of vegetables there as well.
Right.
Definitely the years before, we were growing much more.
Right.
But then later on, the plan just changed, and we were taught, like, you would never grow enough food here to be able to feed yourself, not to talk about the market, you know,
right.
And not on an acre. This is West Coast, so it is wild here.
Yes.
Yeah, the soils are not great. The soils are, you know, not good for growing vegetables, you know. Yeah,
there's a lot of salt off the sea in that coming.
A lot of salt, yeah, but it's all clay, so the ground is clay, and then underground is limestone, so it doesn't drain very good. It's not ideal for, you can't really grow vegetables in the ground here. You'd have to grow them in a raised bed or something like that.
Right.
Yeah. So we kind of created the arboretum, and then we have a part of it which is the vegetable and the herb garden. We will grow our veg and our herb and herbs. Yeah. So and then for the rest, it's mostly trees. We grow about 400 different species of trees.
Yeah. Tell me about these trees.
Yeah. So for arboretum, you need to have a minimum of 25 species, different species of trees, to get arboretum status. So it's a status that your garden gets. So you have to grow 25, and then there's a few other things you have to all have them labeled,
right?
You know, all trees need to be labeled with their Latin name. So I started growing trees, collecting trees, and
as saplings, as little tiny little things, or 6 foot tall,
all different. Like I grow mostly dwarf trees, so I started collecting or specializing my collection on weeping and contorted trees.
Okay.
So I try to grow every existing species of weeping and contorted trees that can survive here, you know. So that's how far I got up to now.
So it's easier to grow them because they're more hardy species rather than food, right? I'm presuming. I don't know.
Trees are hardier. Yeah. You can grow trees,
and it can grow in that soil.
In almost any soil. You know,
right.
if you treat the soil good, you can grow a lot.
Wow.
Really a lot, you know.
I love the dedication, man.
Yeah. No, the environment here is destructive. You don't see a lot of trees here, you know.
Yeah.
If you drive around here, you won't see any trees.
Yeah.
And any trees you will see that they're totally ravaged by the wind, you know.
Right.
So there's a lot of storms here, a lot of salt from the Atlantic Ocean,
of course.
Heavy wind that just blows everything flat. So I don't grow really massive growing trees because they would be just flattened.
Yeah.
A few I do grow, like a few tough ones, but mostly I grow dwarf trees and mostly conifer species.
You have how many?
400 different species. I don't know how much trees I have.
Okay.
It'd be definitely close to 1,000.
Yeah. Really? On your acre of land?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. In total, you know, like, definitely 800.
No fruit trees?
Yes. Yeah, okay. We have also fruit trees, yeah. We have even a few weeping fruit trees.
Really?
Yeah. We have the weeping mulberry. The weeping mulberry is a weeping fruit tree.
Okay.
And now there are certain types of trees that if you plant them strategically, they provide cover for the other trees. Is that how you do
yes,
it?
Yes, you
See,
have
I
to.
I know I'm a farmer.
Yes. No, 100%. No. Yeah, we also grew like little shelter belts to protect, you know, to protect from the wind. So we put like some really tough trees like birches and those kind of.
Right.
Yeah. But even those, we try to grow contorted birches, weeping birches, you know. So we got like, We got a few just straight up pine trees, you know, Peter Sylvester's, the local pine tree that grows here. So we have a few deer as well, just for wind, just to stop the wind, you know, break the wind. And then we have a few, especially plums. Plums grow really good here.
Okay.
Yeah, so plum is actually the only tree that grows really good here.
Okay. Yeah. Tell me a little bit about the philosophy behind, because you know, I demonstrated my invisible skills and talk about sheltering. So there's a philosophy to what you do, right? Give us some of that.
Yes. So we try to grow the arboretum based on organic principles, or maybe even permaculture principles rather. In terms of we grow a forest of trees. That provides food, but that is also aimed to be extremely beautiful. So, so that it can attract people and it can interest people.
Wildlife as well, birds.
Yes, very, very wildlife friendly. We don't use any chemicals. We haven't used them. So this land has not seen any chemical fertilizers, fungicides, or anything since 20 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see it.
Yeah. So everything is naturally grown, you know, just...
So do you make like a natural fertilizer with compost and them kind of
things? Yes, so, yeah, exactly. So in the first years, we used a lot of... We use what is around us, you know, so we have here a lot of cattle. So we use cattle manure. Mm-hmm. And we use the byproducts of the wood industry, so they produce a lot of wood chips.
Yeah.
So I go up to Balina, and every time I fill a whole trailer load of wood chips, and I bring it back, and I spread the wood chips around. So you see, like, I have big beds made out of wood chips and cow manure, and that's where the conifers grow.
It breaks down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can I ask quickly, just briefly, what is the meaning of permaculture?
I was going to ask that.
Regina, the teacher, we always say, I mean, you want to learn to
a while.
To put it really simply, right?
Mm.
It is based on the idea that if you have a forest, right, there's different trees growing there, and they produce food and flowers and whatever all the time, permanently. And it maintains itself. Needs to be fertilized, or it's very self-maintained.
Self-sustained. Self-efficient. Yeah.
So if you grow not like trees, just all any trees, but you grow like food trees, fruit trees, trees that have some kind of utility to you, then you can create a system that just every year, because a tree grows only bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger in your lifetime, that will just increasingly feed. A tree is also something that every year increases in value. So you buy it. So to buy a tree is the best investment you can make, as long as you can. As long as you take good care of it, because it becomes more valuable. And if you grow trees, then you know that when you grow a tree that is like this, you're going to pay a certain price. When it's like this, you'll pay.
Right.
Yeah.
And the difference is time.
See,
of course.
And we have no time.
Mm.
You know, so if you want to see your tree one day growing beautiful, you'll have to probably buy a bigger tree, and it's going to cost you much more money, so you'll pay for the time.
Yeah.
So time and trees, you know, it is really important, and the trees make you realize how little time we have on Earth. You know, like these trees live 400, 500 years easily, you know. Even the weaker ones would live easily 60, 70 years, you know?
Okay.
So, and that is our life, that's our lifetime, you know? So we don't have a lot of time,
right?
You know, and it does remind you of the fact that you don't have a lot of time.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Just sounds like a constant battle on this side of the planet, the hornet that you're having. It
is.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it is. And sometimes it is brutal. It is really brutal, you know, like when you come to the field. Like 3 days ago, there was a massive storm here. Was it 3 days ago? No. Mm. About 3-4 days ago was a massive storm here. And it just, tomorrow you'll see just destruction, you know.
But it's disheartening when
it does.
Nature.
It does. Yeah, yeah.
When you're battling.
But it is nature, you know?
That's
yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Yeah, it is yeah. nature, yeah. So.
Yeah. Yeah, man, sounds so interesting.
So,
like.
So the ultimate aim is to create something that's self-sustaining, varied, yes. interesting, yes. that attracts, you said attracts people as yes. well as wildlife. Yes. So, people to just come and walk around and be in awe of this magnificence.
Yeah, to just see how beautiful yes. trees can be, you know. Because sometimes when we look at trees, you know, we just get
take
used to them,
granted.
You know, take them for granted.
I
but
tend
they're
not
actually
to. Yeah.
incredibly beautiful
yes.
sculptures, every single one of them, mm-hmm. you know. As long as it's well taken care of, it can be a beautiful, every single one is a sculpture. So
I love that.
So that's how I planted the garden, like a display of tree sculptures, you know. Some of them are dwarf trees. Most of them would be dwarf trees, dwarf cultivars.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are what we call witches' brooms.
Okay.
So they're just a deformity grown in the tree, what we would call a deformity. And someone would go cut it off, graft it
okay.
on another part, on a normal tree. And then that whatever that expression, that will grow into a new tree
yeah,
okay. in a different expression. So you get dwarf trees and
okay.
Weeping trees. And
okay.
so that's how I grow the weeping trees.
Okay. So do you, I hope I don't use the wrong word. Do you kind of breed your own trees kind of thing?
I don't, not yet.
Right.
I do, I am trying, you know,
okay.
I have tried a few, you know.
Okay.
I didn't know that was a thing.
That's why I was like
yeah.
kind of cautious about asking the question.
You mean like flowers and you can create new breeds of flowers? You can do that with tree?
Yeah, so that's how most of my trees there would be grafted varieties.
Right, right.
So like most trees grow up.
Yeah.
Right? But weeping trees grows the branches
yes.
down. And why is it doing that? You know, like most trees go up to the sun and,
yeah.
and some trees just don't go that way.
Yeah.
And then contorted trees, they go in all directions.
Okay,
you know?
Yeah.
So they just go make all contortions and they have basically what we call like apical dominance, the cells that are at the top of the branch that always want to go up.
Okay.
It doesn't happen with all trees, you know.
Okay.
And sometimes you have a misformity and that creates a weeping tree or a contorted tree.
Oh.
And then comes the human and he says, that is not there's a deformity, but I really like it. So
yes.
they take it and they put it on a normal tree, entered on it. And then you get a new tree with a completely different expression.
Oh.
So that would be like most of the cultivars that I'd be growing. They are
okay.
just all basically the misfits of nature, you know?
Mm. I saw something the other day and I wondered if it was true about these walking trees.
Oh, yes.
And you're
yes.
the perfect man
yes.
to inform
yes.
us now.
Yes.
Is it real?
No, it's not real.
Right, okay.
No, it's not real. No, it's not real. But it is a little bit, sometimes a little bit overdone, you know, that a tree walks. But
yeah.
it is true that the tree will not walk from here to there, you
yeah,
know.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
but trees grow differently, you know.
Yeah.
Like I grow a tree here, but the crown is there, you know. Like
right.
And yeah. But I don't believe in the walking tree theory.
Because they showed the tree and it had it almost like the tripod. Yeah,
yes,
loads of legs
yes,
coming
exactly.
up. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah,
is that,
yeah,
is it
yeah.
moving for real? Like,
yeah.
Oh, wow. Do you know what
no,
I mean?
But you could have this like for example, a poplar. You know, the poplar, it sends out shoots from its roots. So the poplar is growing here and then, you know, like 2 meters further, you see a little poplar growing and it just came from itself. No.
Oh, okay, right.
Right.
Yeah. From the root.
Yeah. So it grows from the root.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It grows another tree, you know.
Okay.
So then if the other tree is gone, it looks like the tree has moved from here to there, but it's just another tree, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It
right.
just grows under the ground. You don't see the root.
Okay.
But, you know.
So outside of, like, the music and what you're doing with the trees and everything, what do you do to relax and stuff?
Mostly I read the garden.
Okay.
That is what I do to relax.
Okay.
I work a full-time job, so I
right.
yeah I work in a homeless family hub. So that's my full-time job. And then in my time off to kind of relax from the job, I'll be in the garden working.
Okay.
And that's what I mostly do. I like to also write and record music.
Mm-hmm.
But nowadays I don't really have so much time and I don't really have the, you know, the studio to do it anymore. Okay. So, yeah.
Well, my brother, I tell you, that was, you know, I love when a man has a passion and he's so knowledgeable about it. And not only that, you've actually, to use a metaphor, you've woven a way where your branches direct you in your life towards your interests, to where you're actually saying, you strike me as a man that, you know, you set out on your goal and you go and reach for it. No matter how long it takes, you visualize it, you go and do it. I love to see that. That's a beautiful quality. Yeah. And a thoroughly nice young man as well.
Astini, you've been amazing. Very enlightening.
Total pleasure.
Absolutely. This has been Garvey's Ghost in the Spectrum of Roots.
You can say that really well, can't you?
Must be the Irish air, man. Making me fumble. Thank you for tuning in and watching. Like, share, subscribe.
And all that. Give thanks.
Give thanks.
Blessings, my brother.
Thank you, Tini.
Good things. Respect. Respect and love.